session will deal with the scope and the functioning of the NA, and I will do my best, ma'am, to just stick to the essence of what we do. And we start with the purpose of the National Assembly table. And the purpose of the division is to provide overall consular advice and guidance on and support in respect of the NA, parliamentary processes, procedures, and related administrative services. And in essence, our responsibility is to ensure that the Assembly conducts its business in terms of the Constitution, primarily, in terms of the rules, that when bills serve before the House, they are passed in a constitutional manner, that the House conduct its business properly within the procedural guidelines as set out in the rules and the Constitution and the laws. And when we talk about advice, advice is more reactive and guidance is more proactive. And therefore we do both. Processes and procedures, this would deal also with non-plenary matters that serve before the NA. And when we say related administrative services, this would also talk to chamber maintenance and the logistics in relation to the chamber. We are split into three sections or units as the division. The one deals with what we refer to as House Direct. This is the area that deals with all matters emanating from the House directly or that relate directly to House proceedings, business, or plenaries. You could be talking of rulings in this instance. You could be talking of correspondence on House matters. Could be talking also of correspondence from the public order paper, the minutes of the House. It's a whole range of activities that would fall under that area of our responsibility. We also have oversight activities which include the processing of House resolutions. And just the House resolutions and other correspondence combined, in the last financial year we processed more than 600 of those. As a division. And also questions. The questions unit falls under this department, and all of the members will be aware of the volume of questions that we process annually, over 4,000 that's written and questions for oral reply. Then we have research and parliamentary practice, which deals largely with non-plenary advice. For instance, issues of rules review would fall under that. Research on matters of procedure, if we have to review the rules, for instance, and we had to research on issues pertaining to processes and procedure, this is the area that would deal with that. Non-plenary advice and guidance, processing of petitions or unsolicited submissions would fall under that. Publications such as these publications, procedural developments in the National Assembly, they fall under this unit. And also House committees, your program committee, your rules committee, your joint rules, your chief whips forum, your powers and privileges committee, and subcommittees of the House fall under this unit. And also issues of training, if we have to train staff, if we have to deal with information sessions that relate to members, or if we have to interact with visiting delegations to talk about processes and procedures of the House, this is the area that would lead that process. Then table administration section, this deals with our corporate services, your budget, your human resources, chamber assistants or chamber officers, and the finances, ceremonial activities. So this is where the sergeant at arms would be. And the next page really, it's about the objectives. I won't spend much time here. The intention being to improve delivery in core functions, including reporting, reduce average turnaround time for provision of advice, put measures to capacitate staff and develop staff, and enhance our interventions as far as the functions of the NA are concerned, and improve interdivisional collaborations and working arrangements, and also issues of capacity building. Just in terms of our value chain, the input that we put into our area of activity will be the skills, the information, processes, systems, and facilities. We conduct research, we analyze information, we coordinate functions, we draft, whether it's advice, studies,
anything that's instructing, rules, we publish.
And the output would be procedural guidance, advice, the papers, the records, and capacity building. And the outcome, obviously, from our point of view, because our input, our outputs become inputs when it comes to proceedings of the House, it's effective proceedings of the House, that the House is able to run its business effectively. That is the structure that supports these functions. Number of positions, 53, was 53. Of course, of that, there will be 9 frozen posts, and filled posts, 39, and active vacancies, 5. And I will not go into the detail of this. We have embedded some documents that deal with the detail of the functions in each of those areas within the table. Then the next slide deals with APP-related key performance areas. Just to highlight that not everything that we do is covered under this, but this is what is contained in the APP, that we must produce House papers, 100% must be available on the day, because you can't do the House without the agenda for the day. So the target is 100%. A question paper, if you have got to do questions,
the question paper must be available for that session.
Advice within 7 days. Now, this is, I need to explain this, within 7 days of receipt, it must have been submitted to the decision makers. In terms of it being finalized and signed off, sent out, it could go beyond 7 days. But from our side, within 7 days, it must have been submitted for processing. Of course, the number of days varies here because it depends on the complexity of the issues that are dealt with. Sometimes when we receive issues, we have to consult, say, with legal services and with other areas. But we always try to stick within 7 days. We largely meet this timeline, but there are instances where we would not necessarily meet it, but generally we do. Broader research is the same. Minutes of House proceedings, day after the sitting, the minutes must be available, and that has always been the case. And minutes of House committees, 3 days after the meeting, the minutes must be available. It's largely the case. There will be exceptions. In terms of our operational plans, key performance areas, and costs, we have listed here, quantified the activities into rents, updating of and production of procedural reference material. This would include, for instance, what I've referred to as a procedural guide, among other things. Ensure availability of parliamentary papers for sittings. What would have pushed up this figure this time around is that we had to produce the rules, for instance, for the new parliament, the rules books, and we've had to produce swearing-in certificates and a special paper that we procure for that, among other things. But most of the printing is in-house, but that is not free. We still pay, but it's better than if you were procuring this service externally. So there's still a high cost of printing, and of course after this year it should go down, because largely it was influenced by the start of a new parliament. And the provision of content for briefings and capacity building, we do that. In terms of the emerging needs that we've identified and our plans to support them, the needs of members, capacity building, has been identified as an area where we must play an important role, where we assist with parliamentary procedures and processes as part of information sessions. Members in committees, in plenary, and constituents. We are also available to just provide information to members. Members can walk into our offices, my office in particular, seek information, and we provide them. We also arrange specific briefing sessions where members ask for such sessions. We are available to provide that, even when it comes to issues of drafting of motions, which is a function I did not mention earlier, which is a very involved function. We are also involved. We are also available to work with members to assist them, or even staff supporting members to assist them in terms of how motions are drafted and all of this. The implementation of the language policy. We have a language policy, but members will be aware that currently documents, house documents, are done in two languages. And the idea is to increase the use of or usage of indigenous languages, and we are working together with language services in that regard. But it does not only deal with documents, it also deals with the quality of interpretation that is given. So we are collaborating with language services to see how we can improve in this area. The accessibility of parliamentary papers or journals to members of parliament, we think is an area that really needs a great deal of attention, that members should not only be able to access papers when they are within the precincts of parliament, but even from outside, they must be able to do this. So we are collaborating with the ICT area to ensure that members are able to access this information. An area that has really been a challenge, continues to be, is tracking of matters and house resolutions in particular. Where with any house resolution that is adopted by the house, it's communicated to the relevant entity, and there will always be a requirement for them to reply and inform the speaker. When they do reply, that is published in the ATC. But there will be instances where the entity would respond directly to a committee of parliament, and there may not be communication via the office of the speaker. And we're trying to develop systems in terms of, firstly, being able to track where there's a time frame for certain things to be done, to be able to track their responses to those. And it's an area that it will receiving continuous improvement. We now deal with a budget overview. In terms of our performance previously, 2017-2018, we had 35 million, and we would have spent 30 million, 86%. In the last financial year, 87%. And the difference there largely is in respect of vacancies in that area, because our ops budget is not that that large. And in terms of challenges and mitigating strategies, we have highlighted a tracking system. We have we would want to produce more, codify more, and institutional instruments as well. We, for instance, we have the guide to procedure that we want to update, which was last done in 2004, and working on those issues. And those are the things where we think we have some needs. I don't wish to go into the detail of the budget, honorable chairpersons and honorable members, but just to say that our budget for the current financial year is 41 million, and the ops budget is 2.6. That's our operations budget, and our capex is 55,000. We are largely okay. We know that we have some constraints when it comes to staff, but we are filling the positions that are active and that have budgets allocated to them. And we think that once those are taken care of, we should be relatively okay when it comes to resources. We would have wanted to get more resources in terms of staff development, in terms of producing more of our instruments, but we also are mindful of the constraints financially. And therefore, we are saying from our point of view that with what we have, we will be able to move, of course, with the minimal increase where we can, so that we are able to take care of staff development, because we are concerned if our staff is not properly and adequately developed, that will affect the quality of advice and guidance that we give. And that is really our area of concern at the moment. Apart from that, thank you so much, Coach. That's really our presentation.
That was quick and short. Thank you very much, Mr. Kasso. Members, Mr. Singh.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Co-Chairperson and colleagues. Thank you for the presentation. I mean, this is one division that I've always had excellent association with. On the ball, exactly as they said, and I just want to compliment Mr. Kasso, particularly for leading this division so well. Really good. One question, members' booklet with pictures. I saw a few circulating around. I think the service officers had them. Is that something that can be considered? Because there are so many new members there now that when you look around, you don't know who that person is. At least you can see the face and you know the name of that person as a colleague. So is that something that can be considered? I'm disappointed that the tracking of House resolutions is still a bit of a problem, because, you know, we take so many resolutions in the House and we really need to make sure that the ministers respond within the 90 days or 30 days or 60 days that we set for them. And the last question is, with mini plenary something that we've been evading for a long time, but it has to come, how geared up are we going to be for translation services? Because you know what happened in the recent past when certain individuals were held up their whole works of Parliament because they were not being able to get the interpretation, although they knew what was being said. But we'll leave that debate for another day. So if we move into mini plenaries now, how are you going to cope with that aspect? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And I would like to obviously echo what Mr. Singh said about the excellent service from the NA table and advice. It's always sound and well considered, and it's appreciated. My concern lies around questions and a question tracking mechanism to ensure that we are getting a response from the executive. There are far too many questions where the executive just simply don't respond. And although we have an adopted procedure for what should happen in those instances, unanswered questions, I'm not sure whether we have the commensurate capacity to be able to follow through on that system. I just wanted to get some assurance around what methods or mechanisms we put in place to ensure that that questions mechanism that was adopted by the Rules Committee is going to be followed and implemented to ensure that both the quality and the timeliest response from the executive is monitored, reported upon, and action taken where necessary, obviously not by the NA table, but alerting the relevant authorities. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Probably let me also concur with my colleagues to say that at a personal level that I've enjoyed best service from the office concern, because I don't want to individualize it. It would be a mistake for me to do that. But of course, it's led by a warm body. Chair, without repeating what the colleagues have said, but probably to check, to put it in the other way around. Legally speaking, when the House has adopted a report or accepted a report that doesn't need any decision based, what type of way is it coming from the portfolio committee and what recommendations are there. Let's say for argument's sake we have adopted a report from a committee A and it's got recommendations. Would I then be wrong to say that when the parliamentary administration processes, it should be also that part of recommendation be referred to the relevant department for implementation, but also for the relevant portfolio committee or the select committee of the standing committee also to have a mechanism tool to track the turnaround thereof of the department to be aware. Because when the report has been presented at the is it Parliament or the NA, legally it's binding, it has to be implemented. It's not a ritual paper process, as it were. So what tracking mechanisms do you have, or we rely on the goodwill? Because the minister will say that I haven't received a letter for whatever reason from the speaker's office that directs me to deal with this one. I'm dealing with it, ticking the box, compliance, regulatory issues and all that. So I'm saying, is it not high time to have a clear tracking mechanism at that level? I know it's discretionary from the portfolio committee point of view. Touch the wood from the previous committee that I said that we developed a tracking mechanism. But it's a fruitless tracking mechanism of the decisions of the portfolio committee, the House in terms of Parliament doesn't have a tracking mechanism for those decisions to find expression to the committee, to the department as it were. That's one. So I'm making a statement also, if a suggestion, if it's not there, I might be wrong. But then get to talk, if it's there, the turnaround thereof, then it's questionable. Two, Chair. I really appreciate that in terms of the procedure guide booklet or document that you have just flagged, because of the resources. But have we not also tried to think outside the box to have an electronic version, to be paperless? Because I know it's time consuming, but it's lesser costly if you also have an electronic version, because those procedures and rules with time also they need to be reviewed. But if they are not written somewhere, nobody will respect them. Even you can make reference in terms of that there's been a president that has met, but nevertheless, if it's not there, there's no touch and feel evidence thereof. That would be my other point here, or as a suggestion, and also, yeah, let me put it that way, if we haven't thought about that. But the other one, Chair, which is a more, I don't know if you can say that, it also baffles me that since I joined the Parliament, was right in the House and say, in the next city. And I always ask myself, where does this next city sit? Would I then be wrong if my assumption says that if then those matters are raised in terms of those in the next city, that are meant to be referred to the executive to implement them, because we would have raised those issues as a public representative, so to speak, for them to be addressed by the Parliament. So I'm saying, is there any other mechanism so that a member cannot use that opportunity as one of those things that have been there, but have never been assessed whether they add value or not, or the public, the PR resources and all that. But I'm saying, let's look at that. I'm putting a statement and an assumption, but also as a proposal if there's a gap. Let me also appreciate and thank the opportunity, the chairperson, that you have given me. Thank you.
All right. Just a quick one from myself. Do you think, as members of Parliament, do we use the platform of Parliament adequately to communicate our mandate from constituencies and try to push for services to be redirected to where they are mostly needed? It's just an unfair question. As a person who is in control of the system, do you feel our presence as members of Parliament, do you think that we've occupied that stage and we are using it adequately to benefit our constituencies? And if not, what do you think we should, where do you think we should improve as political parties?
Per se, I was waiting for the NCOP report, but there, I'm sure the issues are similar. One issue just with regard to the rules, for example, there would be rulings that are taken by the presiding officers, and that will then in future be used as a, say, precedence. I'm just checking with regard to the rules. I know in the NCOP there will be a booklet on the decisions that have been made previously by the presiding officers. But I mean, it's a separate booklet outside the main rules. Isn't there a way of infusing those rulings with the main rules? Because, I mean, if they are separate, you can't be carrying all these booklets, separate booklets, to meetings. You may not even forget that there was a precedent that, on a particular rule that has been decided in the previous. So you won't be able to, because you won't be carrying that separate booklet on the ruling by the presiding officers. That's one part. The second one, I've always been, since I started in Parliament, is to why are the papers of Parliament only in English and Afrikaans? You know, order papers and APCs, only English and Afrikaans. Yet we have 11 official languages. That has always been my concern. So now I'm finding the opportunity to raise this point here. Thanks.
Thank you, ma'am. On the issue of language and documents, we are pretty much alive to that, honourable member. When I was starting my presentation, or later in my presentation, I did say that we are looking at expanding language usage so that we are not only limited to two languages in line with the constitutional imperatives. The issue of whether the rulings could be an addendum to the rules, we can look into that, but that has not occurred up to now. At least we didn't think that it was necessary. But certainly we should find better ways of making them accessible to members, not necessarily attaching them or making them an addendum to the rules. And just to say that with the NA also, we are about to publish a digest from 1999 to the last parliament. We've been working on that, and we are going to be publishing that shortly. I've gone through most of it, and it's nearly ready for print. I can't comment, ma'am, on the effectiveness of members, except to say that I wish that, because when we get to the end of the year, there's a lot of reports, committee reports, that lapse. And those would have been reports from oversight visits to different areas, to constituencies and other areas. I wish that the House was able to interact with those reports and pass them, those that can be passed. And I think that would really enhance the impact of Parliament if, when reports are produced, they are dealt with, passed, and communicated to the relevant people where there are recommendations. I think, ma'am, we are referring to the issue of a member moving a notice of motion to say the next sitting of the House I shall move. There is a system that the political leadership has adopted where there's a rotation system. It would be one party that has the opportunity to have their motions scheduled, and the next party and all of that. Unfortunately, it may not be possible to deal with all the notices of motion within an annual session, but there is at least a system that has been adopted in the NA, certainly, to ensure that there is a spread of opportunities for issues raised by members to be debated. We call them members' motions. At least there is that. Whether it's adequate or not, I may not express a view at this point. They also have produced these documents, these booklets. There is an electronic version of them on the website.
Chair, I was not raising the issue pertaining to the rotation thereof. Let's say that in the next sitting, the House must debate there's no war, there's scarcity of water. then which means that from where I'm sitting, the department must come with a strategy, mitigating strategy, to deal with that issue. So does it go to the minister, or what happens to that motion? Because it's more service-orientated, as it were. So not necessarily the actual, what next thereafter, because the house will never sit.
When it's noticed, it's not yet a motion. Once it's dealt with by the house, and there are recommendations, those recommendations will then be passed on to the relevant implementing authority. But as long as it is a notice of a motion, it remains under further business of the house. The tracking mechanism, I think this is one issue that should continue to occupy us. The tracking that is in place currently is not effective. I mean, we'll be the first one to admit that. And part of the challenge is that not everyone, when they respond to these resolutions, would direct their responses to the precise to the speaker, for instance. There would be responses directly to a committee. And I think what the institution needs to administratively is our responsibility. Find a way is where there's more collaboration, so that where responses have been given to committees, there's a way of communicating so that the right hand knows what the left hand is doing on these issues. And then questions, mechanism and checking. Currently what happens, Honorable Sinizen, is that we do communicate through the Office of the Leader of Government Business outstanding replies to questions. We understand that that information is shared in cabinet. But indeed, you are right. We do need to continue increasing our consolidating our capacity in this regard, especially when that mechanism that the Rules Committee has agreed to is being implemented. We do need to just make sure that we're able to track these things more effectively. Translation, mini plenaries. The debate that has prevailed in this area, Honorable Singh, is that, for instance, when we were doing the budget in mini plenaries, the question was, should the institution recruit language practitioners for the budget process? And the sense was that, no, you could not. Well, what then do you do with them beyond the budget process? But if the mini plenaries are going to become a permanent feature of our processes, we may need to rethink that. Because we were stressed during the budget process, because you had three mini plenaries sitting at the same time, you had the NCOP sitting. And I've also learned that for a language, you need more than one interpreter, because they take turns. So for one language, you need two, or at least one interpreter to be on standby. And that's a large number of people involved and their resources, but it's a matter that has to be dealt with. So with mini plenaries becoming a permanent feature, capacity has to be increased, certainly there. Member booklet, we'll look into the issue. There is a booklet that is for internal use at the moment, so that we're able to identify honorable members in the House, but we'll look at publication of that, making it more accessible to members as we had previously. Except that as members resign, seems to be members must be updated all the time, but that should not be the reason for not producing it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate Pindela. You're welcome. I'm not sure if you're ready to present, because we've just joined the meeting. If you are not ready, we can go to the next item, and then you can come later. But if you are ready, fine. Just try to keep it short.
I will indeed. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, honorable members. My apologies. We have a sitting busy with questions to the executive.
Just page through the thick document, the presentation is somewhere. Sorry. Can you indicate?
Okay.
Are we okay?
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Pindar.
Thank you very much, Chair and Co-Chairperson. I'll take honorable members directly to slide 3, being the purpose of the division, the National Council of Provinces. The purpose of the administration of the National Council of Provinces is to provide the following services: administrative services, advisory services, information services, coordination services, in order to enable members to fulfill their constitutional functions efficiently and effectively. We proceed to slide 4. The objectives of the division are as follows: to improve the availability of advisory and information services in support of plenary and committee proceedings from 91% to 95% by 2021. This is in accordance with the strategic plan of Parliament. As I have indicated, we provide advisory services, we provide procedural and legal services, we provide analysis of rules and practices, we provide editing insofar as questions are concerned. We also provide services insofar as the updating of the rules and practices are concerned, as well as communication of House resolutions. I have fortunately, I think, when I went into my office, Honorable Khai was talking about the rulings booklet from the National Council of Provinces. We have taken that we have taken note of that. We shall make sure that the rulings are integrated with the rules, or they are an addendum to the rules. The indicators of the division are as follows: to improve the availability of advisory and information services in support of plenary and committee proceedings from 91 to 95% by 2021. Insofar as House papers are concerned, procedural advice, reports, and minutes are concerned, those are the same as my colleague has referred to, the time frames there. And we normally say we are about consultation, cooperation, and coordination. Consultation with the provincial legislatures as well as with SALGA, cooperation with the provincial legislatures as well as SALGA, and coordination of our programs with the provincial legislatures as well as organized local governments. The upcoming programs of the National Council of Provinces are as follows: the report back on taking Parliament to the people in Gauteng. The National Council of Provinces visited Gauteng last year on taking Parliament to the people. We are in the process of preparing for the report back session envisaged in November. Then we do have the Provincial Week. The Provincial Week is planned for the week of the 16th of September. We are in the process of finalizing all the preparations insofar as the provincial week is concerned. The provincial week is meant for all the provincial delegations to go back to their provinces to deal with matters that affect provinces in the national sphere of government. Also have the local government week. We are in the process of reconceptualizing the local government week. The local government week is a week dedicated to local government, and it normally takes place here in the Parliament. We are also looking at the possibility, if time permits, to have another taking Parliament to the people, which would be the main program of taking Parliament to the people. For the purposes of taking Parliament to the people, we normally have what you refer to as the pre-visit, which is a prelude to the main program. Then we have the taking Parliament to the people proper, and then thereafter we have the report back session. We have just concluded the planning session with the provincial legislatures and organized local government. We are in the process of preparing for the planning session for the select committees that will take place on the 2nd and the 3rd of September. The issues that we are grappling with insofar as members' needs are concerned are research and other content support to the select committees.
The select committees of the National Council of Provinces are clustered. So you find that one cluster deals with several departments, and the provision of research and content support has, in the previous year, presented a difficulty in the sense that in most instances you would find that, unlike in the National Assembly where you have one committee allocated a researcher or a content advisor, you find that the National Council of Provinces, one committee which deals with five departments, for instance, or five portfolios, is just allocated one researcher who specializes in a particular field and not in other fields. The same applies to the content advisor. The members also require more legal advisory services, especially insofar as the drafting of members' bills are concerned. We are also looking at the secretarial support to members, and particularly insofar as the delegations are concerned. Currently, we have nine provincial delegations that require secretarial as well as content support. For the current purposes, we are trying to do with what we have, as well as communication services. As I have indicated, insofar as our committees are concerned, they are clustered and therefore they need a multidisciplinary team to support one committee. I have also alluded to the challenges that we do have insofar as the support to clustered committees are concerned. We hope that the institution will finalize the provision of centralized support to committees. Instead of having a researcher, for instance, or a content advisor employed for a particular committee, we hope that the institution will finalize a situation where you have a content advisor or a researcher, for instance, who is supporting all the committees of the institution across the board insofar as a particular field is concerned. For instance, if we have a researcher that deals with health matters, we're hoping that we will have a situation where that researcher will also be supporting the committees of the committee of the National Assembly as well as a committee of the National Council of Provinces. In that way, it may not be necessary to employ, for instance, five researchers or five content advisors for one committee of the National Council of Provinces. Because if you look at the clustered committees of the National Council of Provinces, for instance, we have the committee that deals with, the committee that deals with cooperative governance and traditional affairs, that committee also deals with human settlements, it also deals with water and sanitation. So if you look at that committee, it would require about, let's say, three researchers or four researchers to deal with those areas. It will also require four content advisors to deal with those areas. If we then stretch it to legal services, for instance, it will also require four legal advisors to deal with that area. So if the institution does finalize the model that is envisaged, then it will not be necessary, for instance, to have about 16 people supporting one committee. It might be efficient to have fewer employees supporting one committee. That will also support the committee of the National Assembly. It will also assist, for instance, in the event that there is one bill that deals with that National Assembly deals with, for instance, that person will be able to take the process from the National Assembly into the National Council of Provinces. And it will also assist in the sharing of information insofar as the oversight and accountability functions of the committees are concerned. We are, of course, struggling with the availability of space and other facilities in the National Council of Provinces. The committee rooms that we have in the National Council of Provinces are not well equipped to service all the committees. They are not sufficient, as well as insofar as technology is concerned, they are not technologically advanced to service the committees of the National Council of Provinces. The state of the building of the National Council of Provinces, and in particular the chamber, I think it is well known how old the building is. And it is a building that, no matter how much renovations you may want to do in that building, you may not be able to bring it to the state of usability that one would have wanted it to be. So far as the budget is concerned, in terms of the APP, insofar as house papers, procedural advice, minutes, and reports are concerned, we have a budget of 1.277366. Insofar as taking Parliament to the people is concerned, we do have a budget of 18.123390. That also includes the provincial week. And then insofar as the local government week is concerned, we have a budget of 350,000. And the subtotal takes me to 19.750756. And the fixed cost or the operational cost of 1.586244. And the total budget is 21,337,000. That, Chair, should take me to the end of my presentation, unless also included in the presentation is a budget by line item. I don't think it's necessary to take the committee through that budget by line item. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Hazen? Stian Hazen, sorry.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks very much to Advocate Pandela for the presentation, most of which I think we've been aware of before, and there's generally no problem with. Where I would take issue with the presentation is around the whole concept of researchers and research capabilities. I think we've spoken about this for the last 4 years, certainly, around the imbalance of forces that exist between the executive and the legislature when it comes to legislation and grappling with issues. So, for instance, a committee will have a department come before it to present their version of the bill. They generally arrive with content advisors, a legal advisor, a whole battery of officials that then sit and do a presentation. Parliament, on the other hand, has members of Parliament who are completely incapacitated or unresourced to be able to engage with that legislation in any meaningful way whatsoever. And if one reads the high-level panel report that was tabled in Parliament, our ability to be able to grapple with legislation and the concepts of legislation and the implications of legislation was singled out in that report as one of the failings of Parliament over the course of the last 2 decades. So I don't think we should be looking at fusing the research capability between the two houses. I think that is the one area we should be looking at expanding quite dramatically, because it is the frontline work of members of Parliament. And so certainly I'm very interested to see this model, but I can assure you that it's going to be completely resisted by members of Parliament who are feeling incapacitated, under-resourced when it comes to being able to do our jobs as legislators. And me having to then rely as a member of Parliament on a researcher who is already, you know, the research department, to be honest, is already overstretched. You know, it's really overstretched. Now you're looking at fusing it between two houses. Now, I need a researcher to assist us in Committee X, but they've got, they're away at provincial week with the NCOP, and they're not available to help out there. I think it's a very bad idea. I think it may make sense on a balance sheet somewhere, but to the practical expertise that is required of us as legislators, it is a terribly, terribly bad idea. And I think it's going to gut our capability to be able to do our jobs in terms of processing legislation and being properly equipped to engage with that legislation. I think it's going to continue to give the executive the upper hand when it comes to dealing with legislation and other important issues. And I think what we should be doing is looking at cutting in other areas and redirecting that funding to this, because this really is our core business as members of Parliament. And certainly not in focusing on trying to fuse the research capability between two houses, which I think is going to be a disaster.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. You know, democracy can be very expensive, and I've seen it in the way that both the National Assembly and the NCOP operate over the years. However, we have a constitution that has certain imperatives that we've got to apply our minds to. But moving forward, you know, chairpersons, I know of times when delegates come from other provinces all over the country to Cape Town for 2 minutes to the NCOP just to give a mandate on something. Now, is it necessary for that to happen when we have modern technology in V475 and other rooms with video conferencing where, you know, we can talk to somebody in Canada and in London and wherever else and get a mandate? So I think that's an area we should look at. It's going to save costs for Parliament, save costs for those legislatures to send people. And I know of some members also, when they come here, they come late. And by the time they come here, the business of the House or the committee is finished. I know of a speaker who came here for a joint rules committee. And we had finished it in 10 minutes, and the speaker just walked in after that. Now, I'm just looking at the feasibility of, let's start thinking outside of the box and seeing whether it's really practical from a financial point of view for some of these things to happen. Or we could use video conferencing in certain instances. The second area is public hearings on bills, etc. I know it's going to come to the National Assembly. The Constitution says so. Then we've got to consider, then send to the National Council of Provinces. But look at this NHI bill that's going to come before us now. What's going to happen? You'll get the National Assembly committees going out, and we want them to go all over the country, not to urban areas only, but to rural areas as well. And then when it gets to the NCOP, are we going to have a repeat performance? Isn't there a way of them coming together and say, well, you know, even though it has not formally tabled before the NCOP, that you know, there could be public hearings that will give us a sense of what the public out there are thinking. And if there's anything specific that deals with the provinces, then you can go and have a few public hearings after that. I mean, the land Section 25 hearing was a classic example. And here with NHI, I think we're really going to have duplication as well, when we can combine resources and reach out to more areas. The last question is the state of the building. You know, I was there in 1994 when we started as a Senate. I really don't know why they went and refurbished it, tried to refurbish it to what it is now, because now it's sad. I think as a Senate, as old as it was classic. So I just want to know, Fred Pindela, what is the problem with the chamber itself that you state in your presentation? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. May I then be consistent and welcome the presentation. It's quite informative for some of us. We're not exposed in terms of appreciation and the workings of SCOP. Chair, I'll do this one, but I don't want to do it, but I have to, just to be fair. Let me start by building on what my colleagues have said in terms of, in a different way, to say that in terms of the, probably let me start by saying that Parliament is Parliament. Parliament is both houses, that's one. I think then comes to the issue of capacitating NCOP to do its core mandate, as it were, legally speaking. Have we ever looked at how do we reconfigure the operations of NCOP, as it were, with the new expectations and the ever-changing laws that we have? I will tell you why. If you take Parliament to the people, based on the slide, do we have any assessment tool that says that the intended results to take Parliament to the people, does it still give the intended results now that we expect? That speaks to the audience and the tools and the issue of language and all those things. Because I might be wrong on this one. If then we consult, we cooperate, we coordinate all the three spheres of government, why do you do we, Honourable Chair, in particular, Honourable Madam, you'll agree with me. Why do we perpetually having the so-called, not the opportunistic one, the so-called service delivery protest? Or there is this narrative, which is a perception, might be wrong as well, to say that the government has got this perceived social distance with its people, as it were. If then the NCOP is there, probably it's high time to say, how do we add value, but also talking to the demographics when you take parliament to the people. Because people is not only municipalities, from where I'm seated, I might be wrong, but it's a community of that province. Do we have any tool to ask us to say, so how best can we improve on that? It's a homework if you have it. We haven't thought about that. But also, of course, the one that I said I didn't want to say is to say how best do we use the space vis-a-vis the fourth industrial revolution in terms of using the technology as it were. Because some of even to do, to communicate, to go to an area to see whether the work has been done or the bridge is there, there's a technology that can help you to do that. I'm saying it because I've been told, I don't know whether it does work or not, but I know that some IT gurus, they claim that there is that technology. I'm looking at my notes, Chair, my apologies. Because also I think, I mean, I'm excited to be part of this committee. Because, of course, also we'll be able also to engage in terms of making sure that the NCOP also is not like a second, like a buy a house as it were, but also its importance as it were in terms of also processing some of the acts and the bills, and also ensuring that there's that cooperation in all spheres of government and the laws that we put in terms of their application, the reaction from the society. But also in terms of what the Honourable Singh has raised in terms of, because I want to move from a point that says that we are a caring government and would like to be seen as a caring government by actions. Honourable Chair, Mabe in particular, will say that you know that in terms of SSA, it always say that we've got an aging staff, but overbent staff. You know why? Because you overstretch them. And then there's this thing that from DPSA, they will say that no public service servants, they're abusing the sick leave as it were. So if you overstretch them, the turnaround and the capacity and the quality of the output then should be looked at as well. I know that you want to save costs. Probably it's an issue of management that they seem like they've got the more to do. But also, we shouldn't overbend our staff to end the result, to get the poor quality results as it were. So it's just to say, let's look at that on administrative base very carefully. Other than that, I'm excited. Thank you. Before that, the last one. Taking from Mr. Pastor Chair, I'm so, no, I'm not excited because he spoke about the financials. But I'm saying that is there anything, you'll forgive me if I'm naive, that AGs has raised with the NCOP in terms of the expenditure?
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the stepping point here, particularly for the NCOP, I don't know, perhaps not only the NCOP members, but all members of Parliament, is the treatment of NCOP as an equal house to the National Assembly. Like Honourable Soma is saying, it should not be treated as a by-the-way house. Because there's that tendency with other members of the NA, ministers, staff, generally there's that, treatment. You know, even when it comes to, say, you want assistance from, let's say, from legal services, you have to drag them to a committee to come. come and give. Yet they do it, you know, voluntarily or freely when it comes to portfolio committees of the NEP. Ministers, sometimes they will just send deputy ministers. I've never seen the Minister of Finance in the NCOP to come and answer questions. You'll always be sent a deputy minister. I mean, the minister, the new minister. I'm just, generally, there's that undermining. Even in public, when they talk about parliament, they talk about National Assembly. Now you must first explain, oh, parliament is made up of two houses, NA and NCOP. Or then they only know that, only then that they know all, because to them, National Assembly is parliament. But there's a general undermining. I'm happy that the chief whip of the majority party, perhaps she started, because she started there in the NCOP, she's trying to close that gap. And now she's been sitting there in the gallery, you know, throughout the plenary. And she's done that previously when we're dealing with the appropriation bill on the 30th of July. She's trying to, you know, really to close that gap so that that house is also seen as important. Even when it comes to meetings, if they are joint meetings, for example, this meeting, I know it says it started at 5, but also it says after the plenary of the NCOP. I mean, if the plenary, we came here before the end of the plenary because we saw that people were starting with the meeting. Because if it was the NCOP, if the NA, for example, was having the plenary, we wouldn't be able to start without the NA. I think that is the first point, that all of us must work together to ensure that NCOP is treated equally as the other house. Generally, with regard to also the same issue that we raised on the presentation of the NA with regard to tracking mechanism of resolution, I think we also have that challenge. You know, the programs that Mr. Pindela or Advocate Pindela is reporting about, the provincial week, but also committee oversight. When these reports are tabled in the House, they are adopted by the House, particularly in committee, that will be the end of it. Once they are, you never hear what the progress with regard to the engagement by the Office of the Chairperson of the NCOP and the Executive with regard to the recommendations that were made. The other issue, I think all committees, I suspect even in the NA, that we are silently complaining about is the quality of the minutes of our committees. We are silently complaining about the quality of the minutes. Sometimes we even rely on the minutes of PMG, and we've been doing that for years, complaining about that. The other point, I don't know whether there's a unit that deals with the public participation in Parliament. I don't think we're doing much with regard to ensuring that when we have debates, particularly in the NCOP. NCOP galleries are almost empty every day we have them. And yet the issues that we're dealing with, whether it's questions to the executive, as it was the case just now, and also tomorrow afternoon we're dealing with the questions to the executive again. But there are important issues that are being asked by members that would benefit the public. I think that there should be a way that Parliament is going out of its way to invite the public to come to the garage so that even when there are debates, even perhaps interest groups, if, for example, we're dealing with the NHI, I mean, health practitioners should be invited to come and listen when we're debating NHI, I'm making an example, but there are other topical issues or items that we normally deal with as Parliament. But we're not doing much to make the public aware when we are debating such issues. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, thank you, and thanks for the presentation. I think it is very vital, and I think all of us we acknowledge that it's important for all of us as members to understand that Parliament is Parliament because of the two houses, and the responsibilities of the two houses needs to be respected and understood by all of us, and they are independent from each other. That's what we should all understand. And I'm happy that I'm from NA, now I'm in the NCOP, and I understand better. And the co-chairperson here, Honorable Mann, she started in the NCOP, and in our last spend in NA, she shared her experience in the NCOP, and now I'm starting to realize that the core is very, 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 very important. But how serious do we take it? Or because everything that is done there is legislative, guided by legislation. And are we doing things according to what is expected of us? Once we get to our understanding, then I don't think we'll have problems. Honorable Steenhuisen raised something about the joint committees. I think it's like he was in our workshop last week. We had a two-day workshop where we have legislatures, SALGA, REPS, and ourselves. And this is one thing that we have resolved on, because we have taken resolution in that workshop. And we made an example about appropriations, Standing Committee on Appropriation and the Select Committee on Appropriations, Finance, both houses, that we have had productive and progressive processes when we were dealing with appropriation bills. We had joint processes. We had joint public hearings, but understanding our independence from each other. And I'm not trying to respond on behalf of advocate, because it's not you, them and us, you and I, but we are debating as a committee so that we can have assist each other and have a better understanding of what we are doing and what is expected of us. That assisted very well. In terms of the bills, nothing stops. It is required by law that after the NA has processed the issue of the process of the bills. That's my understanding. I'll be assisted if I'm wrong. Then it needs to be processed or presented to NCOP. And nothing stops the NCOP from rejecting that bill. That's my understanding. Because it's a house on its own. It's independent from the NA. It's not going to be bound by what the NA has said. So I'm supporting what he's saying, and we have resolved on it as NCOP together with our other spheres of government. In our workshop last week, we have resolved on that, and NHI was also used as an example. The issue of the model, I'm not sure if I understood very well what Honorable Steenhuisen said, that we might not agree. Possibly we might not agree to the model because we feel less capacitated. I don't know. But it has been, to my experience since 2014, since I've been here, it has been an outcry to say there's a shortage. And I'm agreeing with the management of both houses that there's a shortage. We are overstretching. So I don't understand exactly the model that you're talking about, the advocate, that we should have a pool and so that we don't really need to employ more. Because even if we have a pool, that is not going to reduce the work, because we need people who are specifically focused and they are specializing in those areas. And to be a person who is not specializing and you are given a responsibility to be a content advisor or a researcher on something that you don't specialize, there's no value for money, because you are going to be paid but not getting a good outcome or output. So the intergovernmental relations of the three spheres of government is very important. This in SOP, there's taking parliament to the people. In the provinces, is taking legislature to the people. There are other processes in the local government. There's is Mbizo and the IDPs and stuff. But where I want to agree with my colleagues here, the honourable members, what is it that we are proud of? Or are we just complying to say we are going to have contact with the people? What are we doing about issues that we are identifying from the communities? Can we report on those things? Can the community say, Parliament was here, or the legislature was here, we raised these issues, and this is how they responded to those issues? I think that's where we should improve, colleagues. This issue also that you have raised, Honourable Stena, is an offer, or is Honourable Singh, of attendance of special delegates, you know? It's money traveling from provinces every week for days they are here, and to us it adds value, because there are other decisions sometimes that need to be taken, and their being there in the house as special delegates, it adds value. But for other reasons, like the example that you said, they came for a certain meeting, and even if maybe that person was there and it was a 1 hour meeting, does it worth the traveling all the way from Mpumalanga or KZN or Northern Cape, flying, spending that money and sleeping over and traveling back? Does it worth that? So we have discussed that, all three spheres of government, and we agreed that we need to improve on that. There's technology, there's Skyping. We can Skype, we can have telephone, video conferences, to shorten and try to be economic in terms of spending of the public fund. 100%, I'm supporting my colleague, honourable member. The issue of the gallery, I think this mindset is not only in us as members and colleagues, those who are here, that NCOP is less of a house than NA. We have somehow polluted the thinking of the public, because if you watch the TV, public participation, do we have a unit that is specifically focusing on public participation? And that house should be a public house, because it deals with provinces, it deals with municipalities directly, and it has representatives. I think when we get to a point where we check on the organogram and the functioning of the house, we need specific focus on public participation. Chairperson, we have said to members that they must not, the presenters, that they must not take long, and we seem to be taking longer. And my apologies, my coaching. I'm very sorry.
That's okay. So some of the questions, I think they are overlapping. But the council, I don't want to say NA. try and assist, especially issues related to public participation, because in the NA there's oversight as well. So just a quick one, you would find in a certain area, NCOP has been there on Provincial Week, on Local Government Week, on taking Parliament to the people, but none of the community problems have been solved. You may find that on the same time, NCOP is there. There's a committee of NA somewhere also doing oversight. So how do we then improve on that? But especially about resolving the problems of our people. I don't know who mentioned the high level of protests that we are still experiencing, but we spend money, we go, we do oversight. It has been said, I don't want to repeat. So we want the NA also to have a say on that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Co-Chairperson and honorable members. Other than saying that, I'll be very happy if the committees of the National Council of Provinces were sufficiently supported. I do not take that matter any further. I just wanted to amplify the challenges or the problems that the committees of the National Council of Provinces do have insofar as the support is concerned. Because to allocate one researcher or one content advisor to a committee that has five portfolio does not assist the committee to be effective. It does not assist the committee to be efficient. So I shall be very happy if members were to say that allocate 16 researchers and 16 committee content advisors to the committee of the National Council of Provinces. That will assist. And perhaps I should also highlight the character of the National Council of Provinces. It's a house with 54 permanent delegates and 13 select committees. The National Assembly has 400 members with about 50 or so committees. But the National Council of Provinces is required to do as much as the National Assembly is doing. So one would say, if one were to follow that logic, one would say that the National Council of Provinces must even have more support insofar as research and content support are concerned. So the use of technology, I do agree that in certain instances perhaps it's not necessary for special delegates to travel. For instance, if we do have, and we have said that much in the planning during the plenary of the National Council of Provinces, that, for instance, if we do have a joint rules committee that is not going to last for long, if we do have the joint program committee that is not going to last for long, it may not be necessary for special delegates to travel to Cape Town to attend a meeting that is going to last for 10 minutes, for instance. But it should also be taken into consideration that the special delegates are members of the National Council of Provinces with full right to participate in its own processes and proceedings, and in particular to vote in the processes and proceedings of the National Council of Provinces. I do apologize, Chair, if my voice failed me, please do pardon me. Insofar as the issue of the joint public hearing, I think it has been debated for a very long time. But it should also be taken into consideration. For instance, on matters affecting provincial provinces, the provincial legislatures also have a constitutional obligation to facilitate public involvement. So even if the National Council of Provinces and the National Assembly may conduct joint public hearings, the National Council of Provinces still has to join the provincial legislatures insofar as facilitation of public involvement is concerned. But perhaps what we should look at here is whether there is any constitutional impediment on matters, for instance, not affecting provinces, on matters, for instance, relating to bills to be dealt with in terms of Section 75. But one has to look at the Constitution carefully, whether if the two houses conduct, for instance, joint public hearing, would it be sufficient for the purposes of meeting the constitutional injunction of facilitating public involvement by the two houses, or whether the Constitution requires
that the two houses separately must conduct, must facilitate public involvement. It may well be that there was a reason why there are two provisions in the Constitution relating to the facilitation of public involvement, relating to two houses, because each house is required to facilitate public involvement in its own processes and proceedings. So I think that will turn on the interpretation of the Constitution as far as facilitation of public involvement is concerned. Another thing you have asked me, what is the problem with the chamber? The chamber has the same problem as the whole building has. If you go into that chamber, you'll see that the paint is peeling off. And it's peeling off precisely because we are informed that there are pipes that are built into the building. So sometimes those pipes get blocked and the water does not run. And as a result of that, it results in the water seeping through the walls of the house. It has been, that part has been repaired many a times, but it recurs. So the building has the same problem. The chamber has the same problem as the whole building has. It may look a very magnificent piece of art, but the problems that house has, I don't think that can be surmounted. The other question was whether there are any findings insofar as the National Council of Provinces is concerned. And the answer to that is no. There are no findings from the AG insofar as the National Council of Provinces is concerned in particular. I have taken note of matters relating to the attendance of sittings by the public, as well as the matters relating to the tracking of a resolution. We do track resolutions that we communicate to the executive. We can provide that information as to how many questions, for instance. My apologies. I was saying that we can provide information insofar as the resolutions are concerned. I think what we should look at is to find a way of not really manually tracking the resolution. We should find a way of having a system that will track the resolutions of the House. Whether taking Parliament to the people and other programs are just for compliance purposes, I would say no. They are not just for compliance purposes, precisely because the National Council of Provinces has conceptualized or has conceived the report back session. The fact that the issues that the National Council of Provinces would have identified have not been attended to is a different issue. I think it's a matter that can be dealt with somewhere else, but I don't think that it's something that can be blamed on the programs of the National Council of Provinces. Because the National Council of Provinces would have done what the Constitution requires it to do, which is to oversee the implementation of the programs of government or to oversee executive action. So the National Council of Provinces would have done that. So I think beyond that is something that can be dealt with somewhere politically. I think that Chair takes me to the end of my response insofar as all the issues which are put to me are concerned. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kochan. I just thought first thing I should say, the matter of the capacity around research and content advisors is definitely an area that needs to be discussed. I must hasten to say that we are doing the same presentations to the ESCO. All the division managers are doing exactly what this committee has asked us to do. Historically, I am advised that when content advisors were recommended, it was through a committee of members chaired by former Honorable Ompabela. It was to try and establish specialization. But what then happened is it appeared that when one looks at the joint, the JDs, there was no distinction. Naturally, when you need a researcher, there is nobody who can call themselves a researcher with an honors degree. You're not a researcher with an honors degree. You're only a researcher when you have a master's. Because you shall have done your quantitative analysis, you shall have done research methodology, you shall have taught analytics, you shall have taught multivariate analysis. I think what happened, honorable members, was the implementation of that resolution. The reason we are thinking is because we have seen other parliaments. They have shared services, so you do not have a researcher who says, I'm a researcher of the MA committee, even if they are available. They don't want to support a particular committee. That's some of the problems. Second thing is, we realize that maybe this methodology has underutilized content advisors who are supposed to be specialists in their areas. And it has undermined Parliament's capabilities to build the various, because we can have teams of researchers headed by a senior researcher. These become field workers or collectors of data, out of which the senior researcher analyzes. So that area of shared services is an area that we conceptualize that at the back of it, HR will share with the committee. We've also done a skills audit of who's where qualified as what in which area. So it's going to be a lot of work, and I think it's going to be a process that involves indeed the members and of course, ensuring that we don't create pockets of people who say, I belong to this house and not that house. And the SOP had a complaint, a genuine complaint to say, it appeared like we gave them researchers whom we didn't know where to put. So the notion of shared services actually applies. We've done a lot of benchmark studies in Scotland, for instance. They don't employ a lot of researchers. They don't. What they do is they use students from masters from universities who get attached to Parliament. Because there's no way we will ever be able to employ 500 researchers around the specialization unless we put them together into a shared service. So the notion of a shared service is not to deny any house or any member of support. It is to try and pull together the knowledge and build on what some of the officials that we recruited have brought into the system. And like I said, it's an area that definitely we're focusing on. The Veterans Authority today, we're receiving a report from the head of core business who under whom the content advisors report. Because what we are doing is maybe we're denying ourselves the resources that could actually be amalgamated. Because if we have content advisors who have got master's degree, the majority of which who could become senior researchers, and then under which we have sub-teams of researchers that we will grow in Parliament, they then will begin to specialize in certain areas that Parliament portfolio committees are faced with. So I'm just saying, honorable members, it's a process that we need to apply our minds to, and it will not come out perfect, but what we're trying to do is indeed to reduce this thing of I belong to that house and not that house, and because that's what we've been facing. Thank you very much.
Thank you for allowing me to make a follow-up, Chair. I want to make a follow-up on what Advocate Pindela has said. I will still hold my argument. I hear what you say, that it's not a compliance matter when we do taking Parliament to the people because there's a report and it's presented or debated in the House. My argument is that you are saying what needs to happen about that. It needs to be done somewhere. But my argument is that Tina, as members of Parliament, as oversight body, it's us as committees who have to make sure that whoever is responsible at whatever level of government are implementing those things. And if they are not intimating, it's us who must make sure. And make a note about it, that this is what is supposed to be happening. And this is what we have committed to do from our committee. And that's my point of argument, that we are not following up on those issues as committees. To give more pressure that whoever is responsible is implementing, and people at the end of the day, they are happy that what they have raised is being attended to. On the issue of the staff colleagues, I don't know if the package that we are giving or we are offering as Parliament is equivalent to the qualifications and specialties that people are having. Because what I've realized for the past 5 years is that departments approaching Parliament. You might agree with me to a certain extent. Departments approaching. You'll have good researchers or good content advisors, and the departments will be pushing them because maybe they are offering better packages. It's not, I don't know, even public sector, they are doing the same. They go to public sector because public sector has better offers. But I know for a fact that in a public sector, it's difficult to keep most qualified and competent people with specialties. I don't know, I'm subject to be corrected, but I think that also, there should be a reason why they are easily poached to get out of Parliament and go to public sector, I mean private sector or department. Thank you.
Mr. Khair?
Thank you very much. Just one issue that the acting secretary to Parliament did not respond to. I know we had the NCOP, it was an induction, where I raised this issue of the quality of minutes. She undertook to look at the PMG minutes and compare with the minutes of our committees. She made that undertaking. But I just want to allay the fears of members with regard to the taking Parliament to the people. I'm glad that you're now in the NCOP. You'll see for yourself. It's a very good program. Because what is good about it also is that, firstly, we identify issues that we'll be focusing on, say health, education, social development, and so forth. And then members will also then go out, visit the projects of these particular departments. But also, it is such that also ministers of the departments themselves will be there to listen to what the community, because the community is the one that is participating. Most of members and ministers are just listening to what the communities are saying. There and then, ministers are then responding. In the same meeting, but also the president or the deputy president will also be there in the last day so that they get briefed of what was happening during the week, and then they will also respond to issues that have been raised by the community members. So then other issues that are a follow-up will then be the issues that the Office of the Chairperson of the NCOP will be dealing with the executive. But besides that, when we visit a province as members, as part of the taking Parliament to the people, then there's also a follow-up taking Parliament to the people. For example, last year, there was a taking Parliament to the people in Gauteng province. Now there's a follow-up taking Parliament to Gauteng again in November on the issues that were raised by the communities at the beginning. In fact, it was at the beginning of this year, not this confusion of the last term, and sometimes you think that it's the previous year, yet it's the same year, but it the previous term. So I just wanted to clarify this issue of taking parliament to the people and its importance.
Malusuma?
Chair, I'm just, it's a generic one, this one, to all presenters. That in terms of HR, I'm touching that because the presenter also advocate spoke to. We should be mindful when we recruit that we also respect the demographics and the of the country, even people living with disabilities and all that. Because what I see doesn't seem like we are mindful of that. Thank you.
Not all the comments are noted. Can we then move to ICT? ICT division, Ms. Bosman.
Thank you, Chairpersons. And good evening, Chairpersons, members, and colleagues. My name is Fatima Balkman. I'm the Acting Chief Information Officer for Parliament, with the Acting Head of the Division for ICT. The presentation will focus on what the mandate of ICT is, as well as what the budget challenges were that this was requested of us. I'm comforted by some of the comments that were made in terms of technology, and it's been pervasive and repeated in many of our planning sessions, as well as last week in the NCLP planning session. In terms of the fact that technology provides or brings opportunities to organizations, and Parliament is not excluded from it. All parliaments as such, we are not excluded from it. And because of the convergence of the physical, the digital, and the biological world in what everyone wants to term now the fourth industrial revolution, it's fundamentally changing the way and the manner in which Parliament operates. And I'm hoping that the presentation will show that ICT is not just here in terms of just gadgets and playing around with gadgets, but we can literally be a mechanism and an enabler to achieve the outcomes that Parliament wants to achieve. As a division and structurally within Parliament, we're part of Program 4 Support Services, where the division reports directly to the Deputy Secretary Branch Support Services. And the division's strategic objective for 2019-20 for this financial year is to improve the provision, the usage and management of ICT solutions and ICT infrastructure to meet the information needs of members and staff. So we are not there in any isolation relating to our members and our staff. If you look at this slide where we talk about how our objectives are linked to Parliament's strategic objectives, we had a former secretary that said, if you want ICT to be measured similar to like building a number of the number of houses that you've built per year, but surely we should be looking at ICT being an enabler that we can look at how do we create a sustainable living, which means we can contribute to the outcome of Parliament. And the way that we contribute to the outcomes of Parliament and Parliament's strategic objectives is not per se in performing the oversight itself or doing the public participation, but we need to put the mechanisms in place, and we've heard much about that, as well as how we operate internally in Parliament to create efficiency and effectiveness. So what this slide shows is that from what we've heard, because we are literally here, and the needs that we put forward as ICT are the needs that are represented by our stakeholders, who are our members and our staff. And on this slide, we show that surely for the next Parliament, that we definitely need to put in place technologies or use technologies that will enrich public engagement, whether that is part of our oversight or whether it is part of passing legislation in that process. But that technology must also be used to show that it is member-centric, because at the end of the day, the mandate of Parliament resides with the members of Parliament. So if we are not able to show that we can put in place, and we need to work together with the members and together with the staff, that we can create effectiveness and efficiencies and opportunities for members to perform their functions better. I hope that is what we're striving to do. And thirdly, many of our planning sessions talked about an integrated service that we need to provide to members. And when I mean seamless service, I don't just mean that the technology will replace that or will provide that, that there are certain processes and manual processes and people processes that still need to be in place, but we definitely need to look at how technology can enable it. And the last one is enhancing oversight. The member mentioned all the technologies that we can just send out. Sure, for sure we can send out drones. The City of Cape Town are using drones already to capture information relating to crime. Why can't we send it out? It is a thought, it is a practicality, but only we together can make that a reality because there are costs related to it. The next slide, so I've given the overall bigger picture that we are not just here to fix gadgets and fix hardware and give you laptops and cell phones. The next slide shows how is our objective, the strategic objective of the ICT division related to our annual performance plan. So this year, we had a target of a baseline of 80.77%, which what we call is universal access. And our target for this year is to move that 80.77% universal access to 85%. And the reason for that is if you look at the comment at the bottom, when we talk about access to information and processes of Parliament, we talk about enabling greater accessibility, transparency, and openness, which are the pillars of democracy and entrenching democracy within Parliament. But it also talks about when we provide access to information, the purpose must also be to enhance effectiveness and efficiency, and thus improving productivity. So we shouldn't just be automating processes that are redundant, that are duplicate. We need to look at improving the process, and when we decide to automate, we will then achieve that effectiveness and efficiency. And then this slide, the next slide, if you can see, I hope you've got it in your presentation, is what I mean when I say that we don't just work with gadgets. We have 5 key areas in the ICT division. The first area on the left-hand side talks about ICT strategic planning and strategy development. This is not Parliament strategy. This means that once Parliament has developed this strategy, that ICT need to develop a technology strategy in alignment to Parliament strategy so that the investment in ICT, because we all know there's a large and huge investment sometimes. When you're in public service, you cannot explain or provide the return on investment because we're looking, we rather talk about public value of money. There's a determination that says we want this and we need to do this. I'm not saying that we shouldn't explain why and how we can deliver on the return on investment. So there's an area consisting of 5 to 7 people in Parliament in the ICT division that develops the IT strategy in alignment with every term of Parliament, similar to what we're doing with our strategic plan. It's developed with internal capacity for the last 2 Parliaments. What it also does is, when there's a requirement for any system to be developed, this unit goes out there, does the analysis, has to understand what needs to be automated, and hands it over to another unit in our division. The next one, I'm just trying to be brief. The next team is what we call our infrastructure support team. This is the team that enables us to send our emails to one another, that ensures that the information that sits on our network are secure. This is the team that ensures that the information that we store as data, that we have sufficient capacity. This is the team that provides us with our Wi-Fi. This is the team that will also look at enabling our Skype for Business for Parliament if we need to. Then we've got our third team, which is our broadcast audio-visual support team. This team is the team that ensures that our screens are up and running, that our video conferencing systems are working in our committees, in our chambers, that provides the interpretation booths for our translation that we've spoken about, that really supports, this is a team that is directly connected to supporting the members that also produces the content that gets broadcasted to our service providers. At the moment, all committee, we have the capability of recording and broadcasting up to 16 sittings, but we can only provide 4 feeds. I'll talk to that a little bit later. This is also the team that assists our committees on our oversight visits that records and they that goes with our committees. Then we've got another team that looks at our internal systems, our systems that are specifically related to our HR systems, our supply chain management systems, our catering. And for example, at our HR meeting, we can apply for our leave online. We can do our invoice, approve our invoice workflow online. It's just one of the, it's a team that sees that our salaries and everything gets paid at the end of the month if there's any changes that needs to happen. It also looks at our iExpense for members of parliament, the automation of our iExpense. Okay. Then the last one is our another team of staff that looks at our systems and our application support. These are systems like our central document management system and my Parliament app as such. The next slide is our organogram. Currently we have 72 positions that are funded, 65 are filled and 7 are vacant that are in the process of being recruited in the recruitment process. If you look at the bottom, the bulk of our staff are in our application support, which is 22, and our broadcast AV technical support, which in total comes to about 42 of our staff members. The next slide is our budget. We have a budget for this year, in total 81 million. 51 million is employee compensation, and then the 30 million is our operating and capex expenditure in total. The next slide. You requested us to provide you with what our funding challenges are. This slide gives an indication of our current funding challenges in terms of how it impacts our OPEX and our CAPEX. Two reasons for that are the volatile exchange rate. The average in 2016 of what we would have paid for was the rand-dollar exchange was about 13.5. I think 2 days ago we looked at when we paid our Microsoft licenses at an exchange rate of 15.25. That is something that we have not budgeted for. The second one that impacted us now for 1920 was the VAT Act that requires of us that if we purchase online services for which we purchase our Microsoft licenses, that from the 1st of April that we would need to charge the 15% back. That impact was about 1.1 million extra that we had budgeted for. Chairperson, my slides now from, there's a few slides now that what I'm presenting, I'm trying to present in terms of our medium MTEF, not currently the challenges now, but if we take the mandate of ICT being providing the requirements of what the business needs. Advocate Pandela spoke about the committee rooms that are not sufficiently upgraded in terms of our technology, even this chamber. The slide shows I just want to focus on this one, which is our broadcast AV infrastructure and our ICT requirements. We, in 2017, I think that business case or requirement was already submitted to the joint, to this committee. We've developed a business case and indicated what it would cost Parliament over a period of 4 years to upgrade our committee rooms. And that would be about replacement of the conferencing systems, the upgrade of the presentation screens from analog to digital that we are talking about. And then the last two items in terms of the video archiving and increased broadcast capacity, it's a requirement that's directly related to our communications department. They've requested to us that in terms of their communication strategy, that they need to broaden their reach in terms of the television broadcasting, and have requested for us to be able to do multiple and increase our broadcasting capacity from 4 currently to all 16 if we have the capacity. The next slide is also something that's very important related to our challenges in terms of public interface and getting the members directly involved with the constituency. It's been a request that has also been made in order to have direct real-time public involvement with the work of Parliament. We're giving an estimated cost, but I think we're not saying that we need the money as in tomorrow, but I think the point that I wanted to make is that we are going to optimize and leverage the technology, that it would have some cost impact. Chairperson, I think I'll finish on the last one, because we've spoken about Skype for Business and enabling members to be able to engage and collaborate with one another, whether in Parliament only, as well as whether within the legislatures. What we've also spoken about, what I'm presenting here, is also over the MTF period, if we need to do that, then we need to be able to put the infrastructure in place in terms of the bandwidth, in terms of the service. We are currently piloting Skype within Parliament, and we're hoping to finish it hopefully within the third quarter, most likely within the fourth quarter of this financial year. I would end there, because the other slides are just similar examples of how we say what we would need in order to capacitate and achieve the outcomes of Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Balisoma? Stenazen?
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair, as the presenter as well. Let me start with the last one, slide 11. For me, in terms of the turnaround, would improve if we can see how best do we source funding for those activities there. I will tell you, for an example, taking the step bulletin there. If you can have that, it takes time to get a special permission to have a committee, because somebody must sign, and if it's an over weekend, the chairperson advised that there's a special meeting that is needed, then it takes time and all that. But I'm talking in terms of the turnaround as it way. If we can, and of course there are security issues, risk issues involved, but I'm sure we can be dealt with, because also we want to get value for money and also to make a difference. The other one, Chair, this one I'm going to be opportunistic, and I'm sure also Public Works will talk to this probably tomorrow when they do their presentation, if they haven't done that. The Wi-Fi in our villages. You know how difficult it is to communicate in our villages. I'm talking about IT, because we spoke about IT supporting members to do business and communicate with Parliament as it were. It doesn't talk to us and point again. Let alone that the gate also, you still have got this smart one with the finger one, but also you still need a walkout to come also and open the gate for you. And I'm saying the logic and the money that has been invested, let alone that the buses in other places, they can't enter the gate. They still use the old manual gate and all that, but it's something else. But I'm talking about technology, by the way, in terms of the Wi-Fi. The other one, that sometimes we always say that there's money. If you can calculate how much money you have spent in IT on installment-wise, in terms of the packages or the program, we'll spend more than we have spent at a go to have a world-class IT system that assists Parliament to do its business as it envisaged. I know that I think as parliamentarians also we need to talk to that as a lobbying engagement. The last one, Chair. Don't you think that also this department or unit can assist us with the electronic tracking system of portfolio committee? Because that one, I really got Mr. Castle was dealing with it, but it's housed there at your department, because it seems like we are not assessing the frustrations of various parliamentary departments or what you call it, units? Units, yes.
so that they can assist in terms of executing their core mandate, but also making sure that Parliament works for everybody, not for individual comfort space, as it were. Other than that, Chair, I'm looking forward to IT add value in terms of how we do business and engage and communicate and also monitor the decisions and the implementations thereof. Thank you.
No, Chair, thank you very much. Now, firstly, I just want to check how safe are you, or is your, say, email server? I know there are members of one political party that does not trust the parliamentary emails. They, most of them, I know my comment, they prefer Gmail account. So maybe they should also advise us so that we can go Gmail if there's any threat or they are suspicious of the parliamentary email. The second question is, I don't know, I see in our offices you will have, for example, even though not all the channels will be there, the DAs, the channels. I don't know if they are in your area as well. I see, I just want to find out, because where they now, I see the household, they go the internet route to access TV programs, for example, and they say it's much cheaper, they're moving away from DSTV. Have you explored that, you know, as Parliament? The last point is on the press reader. I know legislatures, they have access to press reader in Parliament or in the legislature and also outside the legislature, but that is not the case with regard to members of Parliament. You can only access press reader only in Parliament. If you are lucky, a day after you've left Parliament, you can access it using your Wi-Fi. But the third day, you are not able to do so. Thank you, Chair.
And to just say something simple, online legislation tracker that will allow us to track legislation, would warn us when problems arise, legislation stuck somewhere, allow the public to access where a bill is, particularly in the system. I think would be a huge asset to both the internal operation of Parliament and engaging the public on legislative progress in the House.
Thank you, Chair. Internet connectivity, problematic. I know a few years ago we were talking about a license with somebody that was not renewed and then renewed or whatever. I don't know what you can report in that regard. Wi-Fi in parks, I'll have a problem because our kids will start watching movies and things like that. So I don't know how we can. So I don't know how we're going to restrict that. But it's no, neither do I.
Maybe you have
some. But I think it's something that we must give careful consideration. It's a necessary tool of trade, but how we implement it with that kind of thing is going to be a problem. And the items here that you list in the MTF period, which requires funding, is that already in the budget, MTF budget, that has been prepared, or is it a wish list from your division? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. The first question relating to the Wi-Fi in the villages as well, we had spoken about it, myself and Ms. Ngu earlier. Currently, it's not in ICT division's budget, but as we recognize, something that we need to speak about, whether Public Works or Parliament provides the Wi-Fi. But if it is such that the ICT needs, Parliament does, the ICT division needs to enable that. Relating to the internet connectivity, Honourable Singh, are you meaning specifically in Parliament or in the village? Parliament. We just 2 weeks ago moved over to another internet solution, internet service provider, which has increased our bandwidth and also our speed regarding our internet. So you should have been seeing some improvement in that. Electronic tracking for the portfolio committee, thinking you're referring to the house resolution. So our internal team, the team that I've mentioned that does development of systems, they have developed a, what we call a house resolution tracking system. We are engaging with our colleagues in the NA as well as NCLP in terms of utilizing the system from an automation perspective. And then our email server, like all our systems, we have what we do, a vulnerability testing. We get an outside company, what they call, to penetrate our systems, to check whether we can be hacked and we can be penetrated. We run that every year. We finished last year in December with the report that we got, and most of our risk areas were related to user access and passwords, which we have recommended. So in my view, we are fairly safe regarding our systems. Press reader access is something that's run by our library services. If it's a web-based, it should be accessible anywhere. And also, I'm not quite sure you mentioned you can access it for one a day or two, and then not access, perhaps it could be the internet or the connectivity. The question relating to the DSTV and ITV, that has actually been one of our requirements that we've put in our MTEF. It's literally in terms of ICT division operations plan that we also do need require funding to move it over from the analog into the ITV. So it's been a requirement. The online legislation tracker, allowing the public to access the process of the legislation. We are also this year in the process of working with our division core business that has the legal services unit there to look at automating the legislative drafting for Parliament. It's been a requirement that's coming on for a long time. We are looking at developing it internally, using our internal skills, and part of that would be the ability to be able to track where the bill is through the whole process. I think I've answered all the questions that I've written down.
You want to make a follow-up?
No.
Oh, very good. Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Goldman. Can we then go to the Institutional Support Services Division? Ms. Zungu.
Good evening, honorable members. My name is Mabatu Zungu. I'm responsible for institutional support services. In a nutshell, it is the facilities management of Parliament. The purpose of institutional support services is to provide facilities usage and provide adequate and appropriate functional space by creating a conducive working environment. So mainly we ensure that there is a conducive working environment for members of Parliament and for the staff in Parliament. The objective of the division, through catering services, we ensure that there is effective and efficient catering service accessibility. Services must be available at ease and convenience of members, timelines, expected period as agreed, most especially when you're doing events and committee catering like this one. Accurate, members will receive services that are up to date, free of errors, and are completed. It is important to note that food safety is one of the things that we look at when we're providing a catering services in Parliament. So that's the element that actually we have to work on daily. For household services, we make sure that the facilities are clean and they are readily available for the business of Parliament. We also ensure that there is maintenance of the buildings in Parliament. We also ensure that there is mail and document distribution, and there's also courier services for Parliament. And we also ensure that actually there is efficient transport. We've got a fleet management for Parliament outside of the bus services that is provided by Department of Public Works ensure that actually we manage the parking with the DPW. We clean the offices and the buildings, and we ensure that there is safe and regular refurbishment projects in the for Parliament as per the industry standards. The whole FM is regulated, and we have to ensure that actually the buildings, they comply. Most especially what we look at the South African National Standard 10400. So when we are doing facilities management, most especially looking into the building, we align our work according to the SANS regulation. And the objective of this division in protection services, we have to ensure that we provide a safe and secure environment for functioning of Parliament. We improve safety and security in Parliament. We identify and mitigate possible security threats. So what we do, also do the risk assessment for Parliament as a present and for all the committee meetings that actually members of Parliament go to, whether in the present or outside of the present. And we ensure that there is effective control of movement of visitors and contractors within Parliament buildings. All the contractors that are working in Parliament, they are vetted through parliamentary security services, but we work with the security clusters, SSA and FEPS. We provide building security through a patrol, inspection and utilizing of monitoring facilities. We've got fire monitoring control rooms in each building where we check the fire detection system if there's no any incidents. Hence, we've got people even working night shift. Their work is to ensure that they monitor that. We provide office security by managing office keys for the entire precinct. We provide chamber security by ensuring that no unauthorized access to the chambers and the galleries of both houses and supporting the enforcement of the house rules. We also facilitate the screening and the vetting of all officials, like I said earlier, contractors and prospective employees. So all the employees in Parliament, they are also vetted. We also provide and coordinate the security at the present, at the events and all the visits. Then we've got another leg, we've got the heritage and artworks, where we've got artworks when we did the last assessment, the value of the art that we had was 50 million. So we ensure that it is safe and we store it effectively. There's also ongoing maintenance, repairs, conservation of artworks, antique furniture. As you can see, this furniture that you are using here is also part of the antique furniture. So we provide art and heritage research and consultancy services internally and externally. We work with a lot of service providers that come and ask for information from Parliament, and this unit, they ensure that this information is already available. And ensure that there's accurate members and heritage institution and the public will receive services that are up to date, free of errors and completed. So we also, there's a lot of the members of the public that also come and check these assets that we have. And we provide art and heritage tours and viewing and event support. Then we've got the last unit, which is the SHE unit. They are responsible to ensure that there's occupation, health and safety. We comply to the Act and they conduct incidents and accident investigations. They conduct health and safety trainings and talk. They provide event support to ensure that there is no incident, and to ensure that we also align to the Occupation Health and Safety Act. And they provide plans and guidelines for emergency evacuation. The next slide. One of the things that we do is that we co-manage, if I can put it like that, we do stakeholder management with the Department of Public Works. The Department of Public Works actually, as the custodian of the building, they appoint the FM contract. So what we do, we try and oversee the services that the FM contract is doing, facility management contract. Because of this, the service provider, they provide the electrical, the mechanical, structural, plumbing, leads, fire systems and the security infrastructure. So all this infrastructure that you see in the present, actually it is maintained by the Department of Public Works. So we are also a liaison between Parliament and Department of Public Works in terms of the villages. We look at when the issue raised by members on buses and housing, we ensure that we escalate the matters, and actually we ensure that we also meet the DG, the stakeholder meeting, to try and ensure that the matters are addressed. And management of the appointed contractors, like I said. But it's not only the FM contractors that we have. As you see the refurbishment in the present, all these contractors are appointed by Department of Public Works, but we oversee the contract, though the scope is drafted by them, so we oversee to ensure that they work according to the scope of work that they are appointed to do. Okay, like we manage the SLA. Then we do the management of the prisons and the villages and the refurbishment project, like I said. The next slide, I'm not going to dwell into the next slide because it's just showing our structures in protection, household, she unit, at works. I'm going to move over to slide number 16. The focus area in terms of the support for the on the APP. This actually what I have highlighted here, these are what we will be doing in the current financial year. So what we are focusing on right now is to ensure that we enable the work of members of parliament. We are looking at building two extra committee rooms in parliament towers. We are also trying to ensure that we acquire the entire 90 Plain Street building. Currently, we occupy floor from the lower ground or the basement up to the 8th floor. We've just been given the 6th floor, and we'll be moving the committee section to the 6th floor. So the space that is currently being occupied by the committee section, we are going to put the new committee rooms that side. And there's upgrading of lifts in the 90 plane because of we've been having challenges where staff are complaining about the functionality of the lifts. We've also been trying to ensure that we upgrade our security infrastructure, and this project has been registered by a Department of Public Works. We had challenges because of the parliament is a national heritage. We're trying to align ourselves with the compliance and the regulation with the heritage regulation. We are currently even upgrading the kitchen to ensure that we provide the effective catering services to members of parliament and to the support staff. One of the challenges that we have, we know that we have challenges at the visitor center, so we will be extending the 100 Plain Street, so we'll be doing the external repairs and redesign the ground floor. Sometimes there's this smell that all of us encounter when we are in Parliament Street, so we have registered a project with DPW to re-sleeve the sewage and the stormwater parts in Parliament Crescent. Then, because we've got a lot of challenges with parking for members of Parliament, including for the staff of Parliament, we are in negotiation with Department of Public Works to try and transfer the Hope Street parking and Never Mesa parking so that Parliament can be in control. Currently, we co-managing these facilities with Department of Public Works. So what we want to do is just to put the boom gates so that we can allocate parking and we manage it as Parliament. We have a space design project that we have now acquired the services of a space designer. Like I said, there are industry norms and standards. So though the Parliament present is old, if we get additional floors, we have to ensure that we align with the space norms. So we will ensure that as we are creating the meeting rooms that and extra offices, we align. Hence, we have appointed a space designer. So one of the things that we are anticipating to do is to take over the maintenance budget from Department of Public Works. But currently, we just want to do minor works, e.g. repairing the taps, the minor plumbing, the minor electrical, before we can look into the bigger project of doing HVAC and mechanical. What I have done with the budget, I've just only highlighted the operational budget, and I highlighted it according to the areas, and actually speaking to what I've presented earlier, under household services, the operational budget, we're looking at 6.427 million. Catering services, we're looking at 1.2. I've put this 9 million in red because of what we do is that when we procure food, we ensure that we recover the money. And I'm happy to say that for the past year, we haven't incurred any losses. So the money that, though we are not making profit, we are bringing back the money that we are using for the cost of sale. Hence, I've put this in red. In protection services, in order to ensure that we secure Parliament and make it safe, we've also allocated 6.84 million. And the SHE unit, the 400,000, this is to ensure that there's training for managers, the first aiders, and the SHE rep, so that we can be able to do the evacuation drills in the present. The project, though there are projects registered by Department of Public Works, like I said, we have acquired the sixth floor, but we have to ensure that it's also compliant. We've allocated 2.5 million. There's also finisher for the sixth floor, 1.5 million. The establishment of the committee rooms in Parliament Towers, 2.5 million. The finisher for the committee rooms, this is the new committee rooms, 1 million. And the feasibility study that was looking into the social impact of moving Parliament, we spent 2.5 million. We have just completed with the study and we have submitted the report to the Secretary to Parliament. The emerging members' needs and the plans to support the members. We want to ensure that we offer art and heritage tours to new members so that we can familiarize them with the history that we have. So many people, they don't know the assets that we have in the present. And again, building enough committee rooms, we can't emphasize this more. Hence, we want to ensure that we acquire the entire 90 plane. What we'll do is that the top floors of the 90 plane building will build committee rooms so that there is no committee room that sits outside of Parliament. The improvement of security in the present is core. We have to ensure that the infrastructure that we have is of the latest technology. So this one we will push and we'll communicate with members of Parliament as and when this project is about to be implemented. And we want to improve the product offering and the functionality of the existing catering facilities. What I need to know to members of Parliament is that even the infrastructure that we use in Parliament is funded by Department of Public Works, the catering infrastructure. The project has been registered right now. They've gone on tender to ensure that they acquire the service provider that will upgrade our catering facilities. And we have a challenge in terms of the space for the museum and the gift shop. We have communicated with the Department of Public Works through the Office of the Secretary to Parliament to acquire the Belvedere building. So we want to establish a museum that size. The challenges and the mitigating strategies, the visitor center that we have is too small to accommodate the public. Now and then we have to make provisions and open some entrances. So we have to ensure that we upgrade the 100 planes in order to mitigate that. We've got a big challenge because we rely on Department of Public Works for maintenance work. So the proposal is to transfer the maintenance budget, starting with the minor work, so that we can do some of the things ourselves without waiting for Department of Public Works to give us the services. And this one, I can't emphasize it more. I spoke about it earlier, to say that we need to acquire space to accommodate the needs of members of Parliament, get the Belvedere to accommodate the museum. The service department that is actually on the eighth floor, what we want to do is that we want to bring them to the ground floor so that members can access the services quicker, but as well we can get space so that we move the administration staff, then we can be able to make more space provision for members of Parliament. And so this one is speaking about the remaining floors of the 90 plane street. We also don't have enough parking facilities, hence part of what we want to do as well is to take over the parking facilities. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm going to start with you, Member Kaiso.
Honorable Singh, Tate Rai Malisoma, yes. We thought by this time we'd be home. That's not seven now.
Thank you, Chair. After listening to this presentation, it reminds me of a question that I've been, I wanted to ask somebody here, but not sure which platform should I do it, but I think it's this one. But now I was also asking whether should I ask it or not, but I've decided I must ask it. quite interestingly, something said about the facilities, building infrastructure, and many other areas of importance have been said in the presentation, which one appreciates. But I just want to ask this interesting question, because also the our buildings are accessible by the public. But what is interesting is to what an extent that our building, in as far as you are concerned, accommodate is accessibility to the disabled people. Does that what you have explained also talks to that subject, accessibility for people with disability? I think it's important. I just wanted to ask that question. And secondly, is there's an issue of safety, health and safety, that you are trying to do things such that now the issue of health and safety is taken into consideration. But my immediate question is, do you have a health and safety committee established here? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Thank you for the presentation. 9 to 14 Plain Street, what is that? You know, some of us are here so many years, but we don't even know what's on the 9 to 14. I know where our money goes is on the 8th floor, and we don't want to go beyond that, because SARS is on the 8th floor. So what's beyond the 9 to 14? And then, the chairs, upgrading of the gym. Which gym? This gym? The gym in Acacia Park? Because we've been speaking about the Acacia Park gym now for a few years. And our parks. The gyms are there, I think. There. But there's no equipment. And then when you say gym, you must include the squash courts. I'm putting that on record. Because we've got squash courts and we have visitors coming from other parts of Cape to play our parliament team here. And it's sometimes we don't know where to put our heads. Because it's not in good condition. It's not going to take a lot of money. Then, Chairperson's, I raised this in the Chief Whip's Forum the other day, Acting Secretary of Parliament, about the space next door that was acquired across the road. There was a project 4 or 5 years or 6 years ago. I saw it. It came with beautiful plans for additional committee rooms, accommodation for members of Parliament, an opportunity to work at night, so we could have gone home now at 6 o'clock, had our dinner, come back and sat here till 11 in the night, because it was just a walk across here. It was costed at that time. Where is that one? Is it not something that should resurface, so we can look at the cost-benefit analysis of that? My understanding was that because there was some conflict about who needs to take over the parks between certain comrades, that this project was shelved, because that's very valuable property, Acacia Park property, Kudu, Avin, and the other parks, the property itself. So can we at some stage have that back on the table, you know, with the, so we can look at it and see, because I'm looking at it vis-a-vis the relocation, proposed relocation. Relocation, if it happens, will take 20 years. No, none of us will be here by the time looking around to see the young people. 20 years, we won't be around. But, you know, we've got the report. When is that report going to surface before either the EAs or this committee on the relocation costs and the feasibility? And the last thing, just an honest ballpark assessment of the condition of the buildings in which we reside. The ablution facilities. We heard earlier on from Advocate Pindela about the NCOP, the chambers. Just ballpark. I mean, is it 50% good? Is it 60% good? Is it very bad? Because that will inform what we need to do as Parliament moving forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know if there are any plans to expand this place called Members' Facility. It's now becoming very chaotic because they've got lots of members flocking there. I don't know if there's any plans to expand the Members' Facility. The issue of security, I raised it in the induction of the NCOP. I was saying to the acting secretary to Parliament that if you want to do anything to Parliament, you must come before 7. It's just free for all before 7. There's no security here. Okay, there's security there at the gate, but if you're driving, you have anything in your car that you're going to use to bomb the Parliament. The best time that you must come here is before 7. I don't know why there's no security 24/7 here at the Boris. Anyone can just come in here before 7. Because if you just go through the gates there, that's fine. Then when you come here, you can go in and out without being detected. But also the screening the facilities. I don't know if they are too much stronger than those at the airport, because the airport take out most of the metal things, including your laptops. But yeah, you can go in with your laptops. I don't know whether it's able to detect anything, even if it is in the bag. So I don't know what the difference, what they do at the airport and what is taking place here in Parliament. This is all around the issue of security. Perhaps I talk about Acacia Park, because I also at Acacia Park. The challenge when you come to Parliament, particularly with regard to traffic, it's very terrible. If I drive, like I've done this morning, I want to make sure that I leave before 6 a.m. That's why I know that this is free for all. Because I'm trying to avoid traffic between Acacia Park and Century City. Now there's a small road between Acacia Park and the Century City train station. Those like Honorable Singh who have SUVs, they use that small road to get, it makes it easier to beat the traffic jam. But those who have sedans won't be able to go through there. So I just wanted to check if there's any way of talking to Public Works Department, so that it has the part of the road that is not accessible for sedan. It is just a stretch of perhaps a meter or so. It's a gravel, that part, when you start to join the road next to the Century City Hospital, Century City Railway Station. If perhaps you could go there and see it for yourself. I don't know if there could be negotiation, because it would make it easier for people that are at Acacia, members that are at Acacia Park, to now, I don't have to come here before 6. I can drive, because if the committee starts at 10, I can drive at 10, leave Acacia Park at 9, and be able to beat the traffic jam. Remember, I can't bring them home. Yeah. So, yeah, there was a... But I don't know, towards the end of last term, food prices here just went up double, if not more, without any consultation. If you can comment on that, this was that.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. It's a revenue collection, and also Sudan, and also security at the airport. But you know what? The member talked about security. If it is at airport, that whatever electronic stick that they use, you don't know what they even don't know themselves. I suspect what they are looking for when they do that TTTT thing. But I'm just saying that there are gadgets, security gadgets that probably we need to question ourselves what we want to achieve with them. Instead of just getting gadgets and give people money because they produce these gadgets or they are able to sell them, as it were. Chair, I will just try to be quick. This one, I'm saying it in good faith, borrowed from DPSA, that probably also the Batupili principles must be good. Upheld by everybody, not only the service delivery point outside Parliament, as it were. Because if you can't service your own customers internally as a family in a Batupili way, that is it's a big challenge. I don't want to make an example, but I'm just saying it. Let's look at that space and reflect, and you'll get the answer on that one. That's one thing. Two. I like that facility management unit. May we also, within the same breath, try and be closer when the office and the office, yeah, all this office everywhere, even when the passage is here, when it's clean, and it should look clean. It's not like I tried to clean here, but you can't see that it has been cleaned. And I'm sure you understand what I'm saying. Look at here in this chamber. I know also it's us probably as honorary members and visitors. That bench there needs to be fixed, but I'm looking forward in terms of the turnaround thereof. The point that I'm driving at in terms of the slide that you presented in terms of the wish list that we are planning to do that, the unfortunate part for us as an oversight body, we don't know when we're going to do that. Hence, the members are still talking about the Greenfield across there, I don't know, this side or that side, which was in the stage where we invested money and time and made presentation for what, I don't know. I'm just saying that those are the other things that we need just to close, pay more attention, because we would have invested somebody's brains, let alone money. The other one, I'm happy that also the village committees are about to be established. Because I'll be general as possible. Fortunately, I'm not staying in that part. But the six parliament members have brought their families, and they've got young families. Then tends to be the buses to be full from 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. And I know I've tried to raise that issue, and I was advised that there is an 8 o'clock bus. 7 o'clock bus, you are here 22:09. And you can't control that there is traffic. All of us in Cape Town have got cars, almost all of us, even Sudan as well. But the point I'm driving at, let's assess the service that does it cater for everybody to come to Parliament with the new also warm bodies that have joined Parliament. Because what we have been doing previously or 10 years back, the generational mix, a factor also comes to a play in that space in terms of availability, enough availability of transport, if I may, but specifically buses. I like this one, the issue of the paving. I thought we were going to talk about it, but we just ignored it. But nevertheless, we understand that it's money. But the way also we want, I don't want to say you because it's us, it's Parliament, we want also to do the facelift of Parliament to accommodate the needs of members and all of us collectively. So if it can be looked at in the process of doing all that, it must be in your plans. Okay. Also the other one, if we can look at the maintenance and the timers and maintenance of aircon in all offices, as general as possible, so that I don't tend to represent myself in this committee. The other one, because I like that you also said that the public works is the project leader, so to speak, on behalf. The 30 days payment of service providers, just check on them. I'm sure there's a need of improvement on that space because generally it has been having a low appetite of paying service providers on time in 30 days turnaround. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity, Chair. Coach.
want them to be transferred to you, to us in Parliament. To us in Parliament. What is the plan? How are we planning to do this? Are we going to do them in-house, or are we also going to give tender? And what difference would that make if we are to give tender? I'm trying to find the reason behind that and using my experience previously. We have maintenance budget because as the owner of the building, you must have maintenance budget. Do we have that? Also, if we do that just maintenance ourselves and not allowing public works as the implementing agent to do them, is it allowed legally? Is it mandatory? Or is it a non-mandatory function? Let's try to check around. Some of the issues here I don't think answered. I'm just raising them because I've been raising them. The issue of the time and all those things and whatever. I don't know if the last time I went to the gym here, since last year, there was no hot water and no fantastic cold. If you happen to be fortunate enough to spend your lunch time there, when you shower it's a problem, you lose cold water. So we're trying to raise it to the relevant people and also on the other subject to write to say what is the problem. But I don't know.
Thank you very much. Like Honorable Osama has said that Parliament has become young, and we are told during the era of Nelson Mandela, he donated a piece of land in Good Hope for a daycare center. But we also don't know what happened to that. I also want to share my experience. You know, my being here for 10 years, I've lost touch with my kids. So we don't want to see that continuously happening because people come here not by choice, but they come here to serve. And we are a caring government. We also want to encourage family unit. And you know, the bond between the mother and the child is very important because I can tell you at the moment, I think we have two or three members who are on maternity leave, then it means after 4 months they will have to leave their little ones and rush back to Parliament. So how do we make sure that we then give them support? We make sure that in the morning they are able to bring their young ones here in Parliament and through intervals they are able to go either proceed or just, you know, to bond and connect with their little ones. The second issue is it's almost 8 o'clock now. Then it means 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of us. I doubt out of 8 of us, 4 have partners at home that are cooking, preparing for them. None of us, no. Definitely. So it means we're going to start from scratch. Start cooking, preparing. So we need support. In our part for this year, at least let us have restaurants. Even if it can be outsourced. A shop. Yeah, let's have a shop where you can just buy, you know, a small shop where you can just buy milk and bread, basic things. I will tell you why. Because Parliament only provides transport from the village from the village to Parliament. If on your own, you just go out. You go out of this arrangement just to go buy bread and milk. It will cost you 6 times that amount of, because you have to pay not anything. Yeah, 600 rand, 300 rand for.
for spending 100 rand, you pay transport for that. So we need those basics to be at our disposal. So please, let's have restaurants, even if we can get external people doing it, let's do that. Another thing is the cleaning of our houses. You go there for 5 years, they don't even clean your windows out. So it's a new term. You go in, you left Parliament in November last year before the elections, then you come almost June the next year, your house has been locked, and then you are just being pushed there. It's not fair for us. So can you also improve? Because you know that every 5 years, new people will be coming in, others will be going. Can you improve on that one as well? What happened this time? It was unacceptable. Yeah, it was the worst. People had to wait, and yeah, even now they're still waiting. So please, let's improve. My worry is that we're trying to attract young people to come to Parliament. So first impression last. If they are not going to be comfortable and happy, we'll struggle. Young people will definitely run away from this institution. So we want to bring young life into Parliament. So let's also make sure that we cater for their needs. Thanks.
Chairs, I was wondering, maybe it's useful that we share with the committee that we had a meeting, the executive authority had a meeting with the Deputy Minister of Public Works. Because, correctly so, the baseline budget of Parliament does not have a capex for maintenance of buildings. It doesn't have even minor maintenance. And in that meeting, it was very clear that Parliament belongs to what they call prestige portfolio of that will be your 10 names, your everything that's got to do with the presidency. So we don't have even an indication of how much the public works spend on villages, on these buildings, because all major and minor services are in the budget of public works. We don't have a cent, we don't have capex for maintenance. So what we had approached public works on was to get that amount that deals with maintenance. That's why even in the villages, when a clothes is broken, it takes forever. Even in those heaters in the offices we're talking about, ma'am, it's because we have to get public works. So what Ms. Zungu is talking about in terms of establishing that section of facilities manager is we get that so that we are able to manage the service providers of public works. Public works has got service provider where we don't even have a service level agreement with them. So that meeting highlighted that. It highlighted the fact that in due time, the executive authority and the minister, who is the executive authority, would consider how we can get at least that which Ms. Zungu is referring to as budgets to maintain the minor things, like carpets, like a whole range of things. So in that meeting, there was a resolution that the deputy minister, because it was the deputy minister, it was not the minister of public works, but she is responsible for the portfolio of parliament now. She understands. Because we have no role in the villages, we have no role in the buses, we have no role in almost everything. We just sit in here and go. So that's the first thing we want to correct. Although it will not happen in this MTF, but if it's factored into the MTF, it then means the executive authority has to agree with public works to move a particular amount of money and put it into Parliament facilities management as a baseline budget for them. That's the first. Second thing I want to explain, ma'am, we do not have any outsourcing. And maybe that's the reason it's so dirty, and we agree with you completely. We insourced or most of the people who were employed by FedEx, it's not FedEx, it's called BTN, but in history it was called FedEx, and BFest. We insourced those cleaners. as you'd imagine, resource, now they are comfortable. So it's either you attack it, labor relations, issue. But what we've agreed to is we've had a meeting already with the union and explained that indeed the place is filled. We are going to compete. And I know Ms. Nguyen has got a methodology where she's going to try and get shifts working. So we are in a problem of transition and a process of transition where we insult. So they're all permanent. So they're happy. We increased their salaries 4 times. They were paid about 800, 8 something, Ms. Nguyen can explain. And we're paying them almost like 4 times what they were paid. But the services you're getting. So what that means is management and consequence management. And we've agreed on that. And ma'am, you're correct. It's really unacceptable. Yeah. So, but I'm sure Ms. Nguyen can talk about other things, but that's what we need to do with the first one. Thank you.
Chair, the relocation and the other bill, do you think that's your baby? Oh, sorry.
It is. You're right, Honourable Singh, and this was a project done in 2004. That site was bought by Public Works, but it was a PPP. When I arrived in Parliament, the former secretary who passed on showed me exactly what the agreement was. At that time, the amount of refurbishing and doing all those things was about 2.6 billion. What we've done is we have gone to rebase. Indeed, if we were to stay in Parliament, we have to make it habitable. And then, of course, the socioeconomic impact study looks at what will it mean to move. So that whole project has been rebased and recosted, and like Ms. Nguyen was saying, and then we did a socioeconomic impact study independently that looks at what will it mean to relocate Parliament. But in that finding, what we have in that report is also what is needed for now, because indeed the budget of relocating Parliament in this day, I don't think we'll ever, even National Trade, nobody, even the executive authority will not have the guts to go even raise it, given the financial constraints of the country. But indeed, Honourable is correct, we submitted the report, the Open Socioeconomic Impact Study, even the report of rebasing. There's a whole model that was set up, and it's still there. We know it's still there. Yes, it is still there. But the process of doing it will also need that discussion to be reopened with the executive authority chairs. And conscious they are going to be doing it quite soon. We start deciding what can we do.
I just want to answer a few questions. The first one about the ensuring that the disabled persons are accommodated in Parliament. There was a project that was registered a few years ago to ensure that that is addressed. But if there's areas where there are concerns, we address them as and when required. So we have ensured that we address that. The health and safety committees not yet established. We are in process of trying to ensure that we establish the SHE committees as according to the Occupation Health and Safety Act. Honourable Sin, as floor 9-14 in 90 Plain Street building is occupied by Department of Rural Development. Yes, the sixth floor was occupied by the family court and they were relocated from the sixth floor. So right now, Public Works is trying to acquire a building for them because of they've raised an issue to say that they also don't want to go to a rented building. They want to occupy a building that is owned by Department of Public Works. Hence, it has taken long for them to be moved from 90 Plain Street building. The squash. Let me address the issue on the gyms. The money that we've allocated on the ISSD budget is just for the gyms in the prison because the members have complained in the fifth parliament about the condition of the gym equipment. So we are going to ensure that we work on upgrading the current gym facilities. But we had a challenge because of the staff members wanted to use the gym facilities. The gyms are small and they couldn't accommodate the high numbers. So what we did in the last month of the end of term of the fifth parliament, we stopped the staff members of parliament from utilizing the gyms. But we know that there's a request, so we're looking for space where we can be able to build a gym that is going to accommodate members of parliament and staff. When coming to the villages,
there's a structures that were that was done by Department of Public Works to have gyms at the villages, because there was a request that members put on a table through the then Parliamentary Village Board. The structures were made, but there was no agreement in terms of who is going to ensure that there is gym equipment. Hence, right now, those structures are empty. Actually, right now, we are using them to store the belongings of the members whom we have evicted from the houses. When coming to the cleaning of the houses, we had a challenge, because the date that the members vacated from their houses, we only had, I think we had a month. And on behalf of Public Works, they could not get enough time for them to be able to do the deep cleaning. I know that they've made a provision, they've gone out on RFQ. The service provider will be starting, continue with the deep cleaning from the 1st of September. And there were issues that were raised on mattresses. But there's a bigger project that has been registered by Department of Public Works, and it will be implemented by Kuha. But the challenge is, the project will take 30 months because of members of parliament have to be decanted to the Mopani flats, because we are going to ensure that we address all the maintenance challenges that the members have in the brick and mortar structures. And then once the project is completed, we are going to ensure that we build another structure. Like we are going to do away with the prefab structures. So those are the projects in the prison that are trying to ensure that we address the challenges members are encountering at the villages. But as part of the big project that Ms. Jawa spoke about, there was also a plan on the inner city redevelopment, moving members into the parliament. So as you are talking about now the new design, looking into expansion of parliament, I think that we have to bring back that topic to say that should we continue with the project and the villages, or should we now re-look into that model? There was a model that was made as well in terms of moving members closer to parliament, moving them to town. So I'm requesting that members that will be serving in that committee must just raise this matter as well, that we now need to re-look at that model of moving them closer to parliament. I also want to talk about the prices, or the food prices that we have increased. We have increased the prices because of, obviously, we hadn't increased the prices of food for 10 years, I think, and we are really, really making a loss. So currently we're not making a profit, but we are just breaking even. Hence, you saw that at the end of the year, we got the approval to increase the food prices. I think I've addressed everything. But the buses, we have noted the complaints that are coming from members and the challenges. We had the meeting with the service provider. We know that Department of Public Works will go again on tender. What we'll do, the terms of reference, we'll go to the members' facility forum so that we can look at the scope that works for the needs of members of parliament. And the secretary to parliament has also addressed it through the DG to ensure that they improve the bus services that the AM is offered to members of parliament. I want to...
And it's staff. Because a lot of staff use the buses in the morning. The other day, some of my staff were thrown out of the 7 o'clock bus, which is normally the bus that they are supposed to take. The first bus is the bus that normally the staff go in, because they don't want to go later. But they were booted out, actually, off the bus at 7 by members who wanted to come in early. So we've got to do some kind of a needs analysis, some survey or something, so that our staff also don't get compromised. I gave them a lift, fortunately.
On Batupili, we are going to try and improve our services. We'll talk to our staff and try and explain to them that actually they are here to work, though we have insulted them. They must try and ensure that they keep the standards. We keep on ensuring that we give them training so that they can. They must understand that they are here to serve the members of parliament. And the air conditioning is a challenge. Because of the age of our buildings, sometimes it's very, very difficult. honorable members to ensure that we refurbish the aircon for the entire buildings. And I think we have registered a project, but just looking at 90 plane, the entire 90 plane, we're looking at 500 million to ensure that we bring the aircon according to the space norms and standards. So we keep on registering the projects here and there, but the fact that we cannot decant members of parliament and get an empty space where we can work is a challenge. It's such a big challenge for us. Right now we're working in the NCOP and the building is half occupied. You know, it's a matter of health and safety, but where do we move members of parliament? So it's one of the challenges that we are really encountering because of we cannot leave the building to dilapidate. We have to ensure that here and then we address the maintenance challenges. But it would be better if we were able to have the building maybe for a year and work and do the proper work and break the wall.
If I may, because the Honourable Singh doesn't raise their hand now, because now it's later, I understand. But you know what, that's why I was general as possible, because I don't want this meeting to create an impression that we are raising issues on behalf of members. We are raising issues of what bodies that does business in this precinct, that includes staff, period, okay? Let me make an example of the aircon, that's why I was general. Go to miners, the new wing miners floor. One of the staff personnel collapsed there because she was squashed there and there was no air. She couldn't breathe. So I'm raising those things based on personal experience because myself and Deputy Chief Whip, we experienced seeing her. She was lying on the floor. So I'm saying other things. It could be financial implications, but also the health hazard as it were. So I'm saying that let's look at that. In that's why we're saying that. But also it cannot be like the Batupili one. I was not raising specifically in your unit. I was general as possible as committee collectors. What the committee has on there? Thank you.
Yes, I think they've done very well with the responses. I think, you know, we must be responsible members of parliament. And we must save Mr. Modley the agony of making a very important presentation at this hour of the night. And maybe we should postpone that to tomorrow since we are going to meet if the acting secretary doesn't mind and he doesn't mind. So we'll be fresh and we can ask him lots of questions. Cheers.
Ms. Jungo has not yet responded to my question, so I don't know why are you moving.
Yes, the daycare center, another challenge that we have is that DPW is the custodian of the prison. Whenever there's a small space, they give it either to the department or to the president. So that daycare center that we used in the Good Hope is currently being utilized by the presidency. The speaker has requested that we relook at establishing a daycare facility. We have identified the space that we need to work on to ensure that it complies with the bylaws of having a daycare. So we're working on that. But unfortunately for now, we cannot get that space back that was given to us. We have registered some few projects. Like right now, we're working on the old cage store to ensure that we've got the space that we can move people to so that we can have enough space for the daycare center. So that's where we are. The project being registered for that. Yes, through the village board, what has happened is that the members' facility that is chaired by Mabel Rocha and Mem Gwena. These issues will be raised there. The DPW is represented at that meeting. But I will also highlight that to Department of Public Works. Even ourselves, to look at what minor shop services can we cater to members of parliament. So we'll really look into our model as parliament and see whether we can extend some of the few services that we have in catering services.
Lastly, we are four, how many members of parliament? 410? 410?
90. And we have a very small facility, well, members facility. It's less than 20 square meters. And it is also somebody else's office. We have one vending machine for coffee. So before, it used to be used by a certain individuals, but at the moment, it's open for everybody. So it's 500 of us trying to get coffee. It is cold. When your turn comes, the machine is broken. So can you please upgrade? Or expand? Okay. It's fine. Don't respond. So there are three things. Everything that has been said, we're going to monitor. Okay. It's fine. There's a proposal, but the hi, that we suspend the business of today and we continue tomorrow with Mr. Mutli's presentation. Are you agree? Okay. And another thing, please, there is no way that this meeting can start when the NCOP is not part of this meeting, because we are forced by rules. We are a joint committee. So we cannot start when the NCOP is not here. Yeah, sure. And not just NCOP, a certain number from the NCOP. All right. Thank you very much. Meeting stays adjourned. We'll meet tomorrow 1 o'clock. Thank you for your patience.